Whatever Became of Stella Dallas. My name is Richard Lamparski, and I've just had a delicious dinner. I must say I enjoyed the Barbara Stanwyck stew, Miss Elsner, very much.
Oh, no. Well, I'm glad you did enjoy your dinner, though.
We better explain to the audience where I am. I'm in Lambertville, New Jersey, at a restaurant called The River's Edge, and the proprietress is Stella Dallas, the original, one and only, Radio Stella Dallas.
Well, it's very nice having you here today with me. And especially I like it that you could see our restaurant, because we think we have a very beautiful restaurant, and we think that our food is outstanding. And so many people, you know, say, how Stella Dallas, all the troubles I had. They were always saying, poor Stella and all the troubles. They would write in and, of course, commiserate with
me. You had a hard life, no question about it.
Oh, my, yes, but it's nothing compared to this restaurant and running it. Oh, I've gone way past her and all the problems and things that she had.
Well, it seems to run very, very smoothly. The food's excellent, and there's
a marvelous
little aviary. Is that what you would call it? Where one can sit and have dinner and see
tropical, the pheasants, golden, and blue manchu, and the chukka partridge. But you know, right here, I didn't realize we've gone this, two or three minutes without my saying, hello, everybody. This is Stella Dallas. Me and my Lolly Baby. Remember us?
You know, Lolly Baby was on this program recently.
Was she really?
Yes. Vivian Smolin. Mm-hmm. She came on, of course, as Our Gal Sunday.
Yes.
But she told me where you were and that she had played Lolly Baby for so many years.
In your letter. Oh, I was so thrilled when you wrote me, because I think it is a wonderful idea. I know that so many people don't know where these soap opera people are, and it isn't dead by any manner of means. They still want these things to come back, and of course a lot of them are coming back. But I'm just sorry that I had to talk as Ann Elsner Matthews in this terrible voice. But dear friends, I've lost, that's one of the things that's happened with being this fatigued, especially through the holidays, you know. I'm not supposed to talk above the music and the people, but you must try to be charming, you know. You have to try to be charming all the time and talk to the people.
You were very charming. I was going to call you the Texas guy in Bucks County.
Oh, but I'm not in Bucks County.
Well, you're very near.
We're in Hunterdon. We're not New Hope. We're Lambertville, and we're in Hunterdon, and we're in New Jersey.
But certainly, if you're going to be in Bucks County, by all means, drop over and have dinner or lunch at Stella's place.
It's so neat.
You were the original, the one and only.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And they took it off because I think, well, I always say, and I'll say this to anyone, the networks got cold feet about radio. So you realize how popular your program, your show is here.
I like to think it is.
And radio, radio, people cannot look at TV all during the day, and how foolish they've been, because it just eats the material up till it's, and then they do all those repeats. And in radio, people don't realize what using your imagination meant. And because Stella, well, some people thought she had red hair, or gray hair, or black hair. And when I went out and closed the door, they knew it was the door I was going out. But in TV now, sometimes the whole wall shakes, you know. And they know it's a TV studio. But not so in radio.
Yes, you're quite right, because when I listen to you, I always pictured in my mind characters on soap operas as actresses in movies, you know, as a kid. And you were always Kay Francis to me. I knew you weren't, but you looked like
Kay
Francis.
Really, a lot of people thought
not
that.
Barbara Stanwyck, and yet I'd seen the picture. But I always thought of you. Of course, she had that deep, husky voice that you have.
Well, I guess that's one reason I played it, because I'd never seen Barbara Stanwyck in it. And I had never read the book of Stella Dallas. When they had the audition, they had, I think it was 20 to 25 girls in radio. I say girls, I guess the women we were too. And so we auditioned, and I won the audition. And then later, 6 months later, I took the director to see the movie. I'm glad I hadn't seen it, really. I was glad afterwards, because everybody thought she was playing it. And I feel that maybe, I don't know that I was that much better, maybe they chose it on voice and everything else, but all they said to me was that you are an uneducated, rough, not rough, you know, but hadn't had the, I'd gone through a pretty difficult time raising my daughter. And was going out of sacrifice. Of course, they had all seen the movie where the shoe didn't even go to the wedding, you know. And they said, just told me, that motherly love. And so I characterized it and played it. Read just from a script, of course. Didn't see it, I guess, 5 minutes before. I was very thrilled to win the thing. And when I saw it, oh, I thought it was magnificent, the movie. Our story, took up after 5 years later, you see, was the radio serial.
Lolly Baby
Not
was
in
older.
Time. Yes, that's when
yes.
we... Because they started in with them. The fact that she had just had this baby, and it died. And so Stella sent... These were one of the first scripts. Stella sent... These baby clothes, made them, and sent them to her anonymously. And that was Joy Hathaway played Lolly Baby then. And she had auditioned also for the part of Lolly Baby. And Lolly Baby sounds more natural. This is Stella
Dallas.
Oh, do
say it like that.
And so Joy had auditioned and for her part and won it. But they had failed to tell her. So we were ready to go on the air. At least we were rehearsing. And as we usually only rehearsed an hour, but we'd gone in a little early for the opening. And no one... So they called her, and she came breathlessly in. But imagine, she was a beautiful girl. I tell you, she married Nick Kenny's brother.
The brother of the cartoonist.
Yes.
Nick Kenny.
I know his name. Charles Kenny, I think it is. Wonderful person. And, she was wonderful, and she died so young and left so many little children. But she got there for the broadcast. So that's when we took it up that I sent it, and in some way that she found out about her mother and where I was. And I think I went to her because of the death of this child. And that was the way the radio serial started.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but as I recall, Lolly Baby didn't grow up to be quite as sweet a girl as she was in the movie or the book.
Well, I think it was the way... I hate to say it was written. It wasn't the way
now,
it was.
Now, the reason I say this is my grandmother listened to you faithfully, and I remember her, you know, turning it off or turning it away when it was over, and she'd say, "That Lolly Baby is one disgrace."
Now, yes, and so did my little maid that I had. I had a little colored maid with me 36 years, and, well, just a year ago, next Wednesday, that she died. And she was, I would come home and things that they would say. I remember one day, I won't say arguing bitterly because I do respect a director. I think that there's nothing like a director. And I think that so many actresses that go on the stage, that are on the stage, and later decide that they want to direct themselves, lose a great deal. Because I contend that you can be crying actual tears, which of course I did many times in Stella. You had to put it over. And I contend that you can be crying literally, but it might not come over on radio to a director. So you must take their direction. But we did rewrite a lot of things. And so one day I argued bitterly over, I think it was one word. But the word made the phrase. It turned out, I said, Stella wouldn't say that. I wouldn't say it. I was saying it to Minnie Grady, my best friend. And I said, I couldn't say that. Well, he insisted, and I insisted. So finally we went on the air. I said it, because I had that much respect for a director. I never felt. I felt that you had to be guided, that the whole show had to have a director. When I walked in my door after I got home in New Jersey, she met me at the door, and she said, "Oh, Miss Matthews, that's terrible. You said," and she repeated the phrase, "to Minnie Grady." She was my barometer. So that the same, she had the feeling a lot of times. You see, the only thing that Lolly, and with all of her rich husband and everything, the only thing she ever gave Stella Dallas were 3 pocket handkerchiefs at Christmas. That's the only thing I ever remember on the show. But you see, that wasn't Lolly Baby's fault, because they didn't write it in.
Well, but my grandmother was right.
No, I think you have a point there. I think because... I used to kid about it sometime in rehearsal. I'd think, well, you don't have to treat me this mean or something. And they probably did it for a reason, but I don't...
I must say my grandmother was kind of hard on the children because she said the same thing about Ma Perkins' daughter. She said she was a heartache.
Well, you see, they did that.
I told that to Virginia Payne, and she said, well, it's true, actually, she was a heartache.
Well, I think they did that to make you more wonderful, the mother having to even her children against her at times. You know, the world was against Ella, and I think they did that purposely.
With but 18 years...
18 and a half.
18 and a half. There must have been a lot of people who listened who really thought you were for real, don't you think?
Oh, my, yes. Oh, well, I said to this little maid one day, I told her that... I think it was Dr. Sims, who was a very wonderful actor, John Brewster. And he was coming over to our house for luncheon. And I said to Violet, I said, Violet, Mr. Dr. Sims is coming over and so forth, the John Brewster. Oh, does you know him personally? So you see, there's the thing of radio. They can't quite, they couldn't separate it. And they never could get over that I didn't have a real daughter.
Isn't that funny?
And so many times now you say to people still, oh, it's unbelievable. And it's very gratifying because in the theater you have your audience. You can see them. But as Stella Dallas, I couldn't see my audience. And now when I meet them, my unseen audience, it's really a thrill. And I have these six-footers coming in and saying, you know, I used to listen to you since I was this high and putting the hands near the knees, you know, and I feel like jumping in that beautiful Delaware River. And I'd say to them, did you have the measles? And one said, no, I had the mumps. So you see, I had a captive audience.
Yes, Virginia Payne told me the same thing that she
was
associated
with. Oh, I'm talking to her. How is our time doing?
Just fine. How did the story end, you know, in the last broadcast?
Well, the complete story, I don't remember, except that... I was standing, see, Stephen Dallas, she loved all of her life. My first husband, I was divorced from him, and he occasionally came into to the story. In the book, of course, he was definitely in with his second wife. And but he, at the end, occasionally was in, you see. We went to Africa once in search of dark orchids or something, and he and his wife either went along, I've forgotten exactly what it was, but the last day... they had me standing by him. Lolly was going somewhere, and I was standing by Stephen, which was very smart, because maybe his wife was going to die or something, and maybe if we go on again, I can go back to him, because he was my real love. But I find that having the restaurant, I do come in contact daily with Stella Dallas and those that did love her, and as you say, your grandmother said these things, and these people, their grandmothers and their great-grandmothers have listened. And so many younger people that listened, that had to, because they came home and their mother wouldn't let them play or do anything until they'd heard Stella Dallas.
Yes, you were, I'm from Detroit. I guess it would be in the same time here.
Oh, yes, Lone Ranger territory.
Indeed, yes, on WXYZ.
Oh, for goodness sake.
And Green Hornet, as a matter of fact, came from Detroit, too.
And you see, when that, well, that was a squeak, no, that wasn't the squeaky door, that was the...
No, you're thinking of the Inner Sanctum.
Inner Sanctum, yes, I knew him very well.
Raymond?
Raymond, oh, wonderful. Have you had him on the show?
No, but he's going to be.
Oh,
I spoke
please,
to him.
I want his address.
Yeah. Oh, I'll be happy to give it to you. Sure.
But now, when that door creaked, you knew it was a door creaking, didn't you?
Yes.
But if it's on TV...
That chills up your spine.
Yes, but on TV, you might see a little something shaking there.
I think the same is true for The Man in Black on Suspense. I saw that black cape and the cloak and the big hat, yes.
I go back so far to 195 Broadway. We had some telephone men in for luncheon, president of the Bell, New Jersey Bell telephone, the other day. And he was asking how long I'd been in radio. Well, I said, I was on 195 Broadway. That was the old telephone building. I said, I don't like to tell that, but in a way I do, because it was many years ago.
I don't know
of anyone that I know that, other than, not that just the serials, but that had been in radio any longer.
I'm going to have a number of radio pioneers, as they call them, on Arthur Hughes, who was just plain Bill. He was around about your neighborhood on NBC at about the same time.
Oh, he was on. That was part of that block of
shows. That
was
tea time in Detroit, because there was Portia Faces Life.
Yes.
And you.
But it
was just plain Bill. Now, the other one, let me see if I can...
Backstage Wife. Did you say
Mary
that?
Noble, Backstage Wife. No, I haven't had her.
And Lorenzo Jones.
And his wife, Val, who loved him.
Yes. Oh, dear. Well, have you all the lead-ins for those two?
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Well, it was really a wonderful, wonderful experience, radio, because you did. I think it was quite a challenge Because you had to make people feel. You had to believe it yourself. Now, I used to, in rehearsals a lot of times, kid around, because some of the things, the situations, as you know, were pretty impossible. Seemed to be, people listening in. I was in a submarine at the bottom of the Suez Canal, for instance, and I was lost in a sandstorm in the Sahara Desert. And I went into a harem and rescued Lolly Baby. So some of these things seem a little bit far-fetched. So you had to believe them yourself to put them over. But sometimes I'd kid a little in the rehearsal because it would make me, then I knew when I played it, I believed that's right where I was. And the tears would flow.
You know, that picture holds up very well because the tears were about to flow when I saw it just recently on television. I'd seen it about 10 years before.
What, the picture?
The Barbara Stanwyck picture, yes. Oh, at the end when she's looking through that iron fence,
and
grating.
That party. Of course, they all say that to me. Now, but the people have it all mixed up, the picture and Stella Dallas on the air, you see, as me and Malali Baby were. They all often say, well, oh, that time you were standing by the window. But I wasn't, you see. That was never in the radio show. But I saw it twice, and then in Trenton, Mr. Matthews, my husband, Jack Matthews, and these friends of ours who lived next to us there in New Jersey, we went down to see it in Trenton, and I took a young girl with me that had never seen it. Well, we went into the place and came out. I just sobbed, and I came out. I was crying, and Mr. Matthews, his eyes were red, but he turned to me with somebody and said, I never heard of such a thing. That's ridiculous. You play this thing. Every day you play, how in the world can you get so excited and cry like that? He was upset because I was, but I did. I just cried like a baby.
I'd like to see the silent version. I don't know anyone who has.
That was Belle Bennett.
Belle
Baker,
Ronald,
I think it was.
No, it was Belle Bennett.
Belle Bennett, and there was another one.
And Ronald Coleman was the husband.
Ronald Coleman,
that's right.
I didn't know that.
And,
I don't. Was it done
there? The Alan Hale role was Jean Hirschfeld. Now, I don't remember who played Lolly Baby.
Well, because Anne Sheridan did in the other, didn't she? Yes.
Anne Shirley.
No, Anne Sheridan, wasn't it? In the one with Barbara Stanwyck?
The one with Barbara Stanwyck. Was Anne Shirley.
It was. Mm-hmm. Well, there was another one of the old-timers, too. There was another one besides this Belle Bennett. Before that, too? There were three movies. And then... Barbara Stanwyck, I think, yes, was the third.
You were on the Red Network, as I recall.
No, that was the Blue, wasn't it?
No, I think you were on Red.
Well, was NBC, but they split up.
I'll tell you someone else I'm going to have on, one of your neighbors on CBS, Helen Trent, Julie Stevens.
Oh, my. How I love her.
And I tried to get her on with Gil Whitney. Who she finally married in the last chapter.
Oh, did they do that?
Did.
Well, I didn't know that.
The last segment of Helen Trent, she married Gil Whitney after all of those years.
All those years. And, well, I used to be on that show, you know, a lot.
You were?
Oh, yes, and she was on mine. See, that was it was on 1:15, so I could make that and then go over to Stella Dallas, have luncheon, and go over and do my show. Oh, yes, that movie serial that she made in Georgia, I was the boarding house woman. And a mean old thing, too, I was. I was just down there in Georgia, and believe me, I just made them step around.
I believe she would have been 64 by somebody's calculation. The character would have been.
Yes. When
by the time she went off the air, she was still trying to prove that romance could live at life at 35 and even beyond. That's a good thought. We must hold that.
Oh, well, did you...
Because she married him.
Yes, of course. That's wonderful. But she... Has Gil been on, too, you say?
No, he's in California.
Oh.
I tried to get him as sort of a surprise to her, you see, and have them together. But unfortunately, David Gothard...
You couldn't have him on the... Yes, David
Gothard. He is in California.
Wonderful person. Maybe you could have it let you type him in for a telephone.
Perhaps Agatha.
Yeah.
I hope she's not listening. It won't surprise her then.
No, maybe he could come by telephone. Maybe Helen is... No, she might be listening in.
I talked to... friend of yours, an actress who is also an executive with the George Heller Memorial Foundation, and she said, be sure to ask Stella about the flood.
Oh.
That's all I know. So
well, that's Elizabeth Morgan. I know you're talking about that.
You know who, I'm sure you know this, but I think the audience would be interested. Do you know who one of Stella Dallas's biggest, greatest fans was? Cole Porter.
Oh, yes, I have the most
You know what I'm referring to?
Oh, of course.
When you were
I
going
do.
Off the air and he organized that Keep Stella Dallas on the Air campaign, he had people like Lady Mendel. He didn't? Well,
no, I didn't know that part. I knew the other, you see.
Who's the other one? Elsa Maxwell?
Oh, no.
Yes, they were both they were writing letters and sending telegrams to NBC. I'll tell you who told me this.
That I never knew.
Because he's been very helpful to me all along, and particularly with your interview. His name is George Eales. And anyone, I think, who's listening, who's interested in Cole Porter, don't buy the Cole Porter books. The definitive Cole Porter is yet to be published. It'll be out this fall, published by Putnam. It's written by George Eales, and it's called Cole Porter, The Life That Late He Led. Well, Mr. Eales is a very old friend of the late Mr. Porter, and it was a labor of love. He's done a marvelous job with this book.
Is he the one that came, this man came to my studio? And he as a Christmas present, it was just Stella Dallas, though. He did a whole book of Stella Dallas and had messages from me and pictures. Was that George Eales?
Yes, it was.
And gave it to him, and then Cole Porter wrote me, I have the letter at home, wrote me thanking me, and what we had hoped to get together. I was to go to see him. And then it was when he lost his leg, and I don't think he wanted to see anybody.
No, he was very ill after
But he
that.
Called it his sacred hour. Well, imagine that. And he wouldn't get on a boat unless there was a radio. And when he traveled across the country, they told me that he'd have to call his wife every night and hear, get the story.
Well, he took a trip with a friend of George, who was telling me last night, Mr. Eales, that I don't know where they were going, but he said, the other man who was with Mr. Porter said, you know, we could have gotten there in half the time, but he kept stopping in every roadside hot dog stand saying, what time is Stella Dallas on in this particular state?
No, did he tell
Wouldn't
you
miss
that?
It. He said he would give pool
this
parties.
Mr. Eales told you
Mr.
That?
Eales told me. He would give pool parties, and when the time came, whatever time it was in California, at Brentwood, this enormous home he had, everyone had to be quiet. And he would say to people like, Lady Mendel, be quiet, please, because Stella Dallas is about to go on the air.
Oh, my goodness.
And would ask people like Atwater Kent to please either leave the vicinity of the pool or be quiet while Stella Dallas was on the air.
Oh, you really make me feel very happy.
Can you tell us just a little bit about the flood? And then we'll...
Well, I will try to tell you. It isn't too... We had... of course, this was the flood of 1955, and it flooded us out right up to the ceilings. And I was in New York. I left down there because the crest was supposed to be at 10 o'clock, and I left. This was Friday morning. Beautiful, lovely day. And so I came on in, and I went to, I had an appointment with Elizabeth Arden's, and then I went over to the show, and I had the first reading. And then I said, I want to call home. So I telephoned, and the operator came back and said, the phone is temporarily disconnected. Well, nearly dying. Of course, I knew the chief operator. I said, well, please connect me with the chief operator. So she did, and she told me, she said, Mrs. Matthews, they've had to evacuate. Now, I left this place with the water. Well, it was up on the outside, close to the steps. But here was this beautiful and a lovely day and the sun shining and the flowers and the birds singing in that cage, you know. They were in the summer we have little finches. And so I went back in and I just was sunk. And so we had to do the dress. And when the director came out of the door, I met him. I said, don't worry. I know I couldn't even get the voice. Me and Mullally, baby, it seemed to me I was talking up like this. So I said, don't worry about it on the air. So we went on the air and... I was all right. The show must go on. And they were all listening in. They had to leave the place. And they were all listening in. They say, oh, she doesn't know. She doesn't know. So I got in my car. I had to drive all alone. Usually some of them drove me. But I drove all alone, and I got within about four blocks, and I had to get out and walk the rest of the way. And I got out, and here they were. It was up to the sign, you know, with the sign out above the front door. And my husband was out on a little roof with the three bartenders. They'd been all afternoon hauling the... what they had to get from the bar, all the bottles and the liquor out, up a ladder, and then they'd gotten it on there. And the mermaid, did you see our mermaid bar?
Oh, yes.
Well, the mermaid was sitting up there. We were.
Oh, yes.
Well, the mermaid was sitting out there with them, and I called across to him, and he said, hello, baby, how are you? Just as if nothing. By that time, they were all feeling no pain. Well, I started, it was the... water across there. The parking lot is higher across the way. And it was quite deep, and it took a 15-horsepower engine to even keep the boats up there, going in and getting the people out. So I got Violet and went home, got my bathing suit on, and came down, and I couldn't. It was so swift, I couldn't go straight across, so I swam. It was just a short distance across there. Well, it was the width of a street. And so I swam up, and then I let myself sort of come with the current and get towards the building. Meantime, one of the bartenders had started down. She said, well, I'll help you, called to me. And I said, oh, no, that's all right. And Mr. Matthews said, oh, no, she's all right, baby. She's a wonderful swimmer. Come on, baby. Come on. I said, she's a wonderful swimmer. So I got to the building, and the bartender had gotten there by that time. And with this, he grabbed me and pulled me, thinking he was pulling me to safety, right through a Rambler Rose. I want to tell you, I was wishing I had drowned. It was the most harrowing thing to have all those thorns, you know. So we got up there, and I found out they hadn't gotten my sailfish out. And I just said something about it. I didn't expect him to swim in, so our manager, my godson, who brought me in today, Carl Cathers, he swam in. It was up. You see the lanterns in that other room?
Yes.
Well, that's where the water was. So there wasn't much room for the ceiling, so he swam in, and when they... By the time I got over there, when I told you about getting over there and the mermaid, here was a sailfish and the mermaid lying side by side on the roof. But the real story is the heroic cleaning up, and I don't think we have time for that.
Right. Well, I see even your private life is not without incident
or
trouble.
And dear friends, those of you listening in, I want you to know that this has been a very, very nostalgic visit for me, and I've enjoyed it. And I hope you have, too, and I hope that if any of you can come down and see me, always ask for me, because I might not be right there. I'm in the kitchen, and I'm in the office and all around, but I want to see all of you friends whenever I can. And I'm so glad that you, Richard Lamparsky, asked me to come in.
Oh, I was delighted, you know, that I could come down here, and your food was delicious. And
yes.
I had so many letters asking about Stella Dallas, and I was curious myself.
Well, when you asked me to come in here to our little corner, I thought it was best because to get away from the noise of the restaurant.
Yes, although it's a very restful restaurant,
but this
we should
is,
say this.
It is, but I mean that for the feeding in on the back, a lot of the background music that we have, sometimes a little too loud. So when you asked me to come in here instead of right out in the middle, I thought it was a very good idea.
You mentioned music, and that gives me a perfect clue to do something I wanted to do since we began this interview. Let's sort of end this program, because we're near the end of it now, with your love theme from Stella Dallas. Quite different. Her name is Olga Baklanova. She came to this country in 1925 with the Moscow Art Theater. She made a number of silent films, one for Joseph von Sternberg called The Docks of New York, and another one called Streets of Sin. Played a prostitute in both, which she'll tell about.
Oh.
And then she's most famous for the role in The Talkie, one of the most bizarre films I've ever seen, called Freaks.
I didn't see it.
Oh, it was
no.
Strange,
but
bizarre
I know her,
film.
I think.
Yeah, she was a marvelous actress, and she will be here in person, Olga Baklanova. So this is Richard Lamparsky. Thank you for listening and saying goodbye from the River's Edge Restaurant, run by Stella Dallas in Lambertville, New Jersey. And I hope you'll be with us again next week at the same time when we find out whatever became of Olga Baklanova.
Bye. God bless you all.
became of Stella Dallas was pre-recorded.